Good afternoon. Right, we are slightly above the hour. It looks like the Illinois weather really likes Faculty Senate Wednesday's meeting. Last time we were kind of blessed with snow, and today is combination of snow and rain. Anyway, welcome everyone to Faculty Senate meeting this Wednesday, February 22nd, 2023. With that, I would declare the meeting to an order and move to item two, to verification of quorum. And per Illinois Open Meeting Act provisions, as a public body, Faculty Senate must have a quorum of a simple majority for a meeting to convene. But do we have a quorum to proceed?
We do have a quorum, so thank you everyone for coming out. And my usual reminders, both our members and our guests, thank you for filling out the attendance slip and leaving that at your seat. We will collect them after the meeting. And another friendly reminder, if you want to make a comment or ask a question, please go to a microphone, and it helps us if you tell us your name and who you represent. Thanks.
Thank you, Pat. This brings us to item number three, adoption of the agenda for today's afternoon, February 22nd meeting. Can I have a motion in a second to adopt the agenda? Thank you. Is there any discussion? I would like to make a motion to amend the agenda. Rena Costones and Alicia Shetman are unable to be with us today. As a result, I would like to amend the agenda by removing item 8C. Can I have a second to my motion to amend the agenda? Motion to amend the agenda passes. Now, we'll go back to the original motion to adopt the agenda on the floor. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of adopting the agenda as amended, please say aye. Oppose. Motion to adopt agenda as amended passes. Thank you. We shall now move to item four, to approve the minute of the meeting from January 25th, 2023. And I believe everyone should have the agenda in front of you. And if you need a minute or so to review the minute, we can do so. So I'm going to allow just a minute for folks who might need time to review the minute, and then we can. Thank you, David. Second. Okay, we have seven. Any discussion, addition, deletions of the minute? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye. Any opposed? Abstentions? The minutes are approved. Thank you. Agenda item five, public comment. But do we have any timely request for public comment?
No public comment today.
Right, thank you. So this brings us to agenda item six, Faculty Senate President Announcement. We have a full agenda for today's meeting. We have two presentations, one in a form of introduction by Kari Cortegas, Faculty Senate Personnel Advisor. The second presentation will come from Jason Rhodes, Associate Vice Provost for Teaching, Learning, and Digital Education on ChatGPT. With that, I will move on to agenda item seven, and I'm happy to invite Provost Ingram for any remarks or comment she may want to make. So I see it just that there's no need for comment or remarks, so we will proceed to our next agenda item, and that will be item eight. Items for Faculty Senate consideration. As I said, the first agenda item, item 8A, would be Faculty Personnel Advisor Introduction and Welcome to this body. Kari Cortegas will be joining us, I believe, via online. And with that, I would like to invite Dr. Cortegas to proceed with her introduction and welcome remark virtually. The floor is all yours. Thank you.
Well, thank you and thank you for welcoming me. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Yes, okay. We can hear you.
Thank you. And thank you very much for selecting me to be the Faculty Personnel Advisor. It's such an honor to be selected and to be in this role. I apologize for not being able to join you in person. I had to go to Massachusetts to help my mother with some health-related issues, so I appreciate the opportunity to join you virtually. My name is Kari Cortegas. I'm an associate professor in the Department of Counseling and Higher Education. I started the role as Faculty Personnel Advisor in November, so I'm still new to the role. And part of my goals is to do some outreach and outreach efforts, and coming to this body as part of that. And so my background is in higher education administration. I teach on that with our master's and our doctoral program. And I've also served at NIU, both on our DPC as well as College Council. For those that you do not know, I'm going to try to bring up. So a little bit about the Faculty Personnel Advisor role. So what do I do? Part of my role is to be a confidential resource available to all NIU faculty, including tenure track faculty, clinical, and instructors. I help advise faculty on issues related to personnel and policy issues. I meet with folks around potentially experiencing difficulties with the personnel process. And then those who may be dissatisfied with personnel decisions. I also, as according to our bylaws, have a role around observing and making recommendations to personnel processes. I had a slide up, but I think it might not be sharing. So I'll just stop that. I'll send it along afterwards. But and so part of the role is to be a support person for faculty who may want some advice, some guidance, a listening ear around clarifying policies and procedures, identifying how to address and resolve personnel related issues. Part of what I can do in terms of how I can help is meet individually with people to discuss their concerns. I can help find information regarding policies and procedures and assist in clarifying those. I can help strategize courses of action available to faculty. And I can help review drafts of emails that they may be interested in sending around personnel or other materials that they may need some feedback on when trying to get clarifying information. And I can also discuss additional resources at NIU to assist, such as the Ombudsperson, employee assistance, and other offices that can help, and what might be the differences in utilizing different services on campus. I think the other and probably the biggest thing I can do is be a listener, and that part of my role in this is to listen, to support, and to provide good advice for faculty who may be navigating some workplace issues that are hard and challenging. My role is not to be sort of a mediator and mediate individual conflicts, or to be an ongoing counselor or a grievance officer, but I can connect people to those people and resources and talk about avenues that they can pursue. But most of all, I think my role is about being a listener, advisor, and discuss possible next steps and directions. And so my hope is that folks will talk to their departments and their colleagues if they're looking for somebody to provide good advice around personnel issues, that they think about sending my name along, and that I'm a listening ear and can provide support and advice going through. I'm going to stop there and take any questions folks might have. And thank you again for letting me do a little bit of advice, do a little bit of a welcome.
So we'll take questions or comments. We have two speakers. There's one mic here, another one to my left side. Questions?
Patrick will be sharing her email. So for faculty to contact her.
Well, if there is no question, I would ask you to join me in thanking Dr. Cartagas for taking this time to come and introduce herself, explain the duties, responsibilities of faculty advisor. From the moment Dr. Cartagas was elected and accepted this position, he reached out and asked as to how she can best serve faculty. We had a couple of conversations, outreach mechanisms, strategies, and many of which she also explained and mentioned in her introductory remark. So I want to thank you again, Dr. Cartagas, for taking time to come and introduce yourself to this body and also avail your service to promote issues of interest to faculty. Again, thank you very much. Please join me. So we move to item 8B, and this will be on Chat GPT and AI technologies in teaching. I have to admit, like when this issue first came to our attention. I had a conversation with Provost Ingram, who informed me of discussion around ChatGPT and AI around university senior leadership. And at the time, and this topic was just picking up, but as we speak today, I think there is not a second, no media, you know, or anything that will not say anything about this issue. And the interesting thing for me is it is not just one-sided, right? This is a topic that presents challenges to how, you know, in the academic environment, we should embrace this ever evolving technology and how to use it in what we do best in fostering critical thinking and also innovation as well. So without further ado, I would like to invite Jason Rhodes, Associate Vice Provost for Teaching, Learning and Digital Education, who is going to tell us a little bit more. And I know CLTL has been doing a lot of things around ChatGPT, and we're looking forward to hearing from you about it.
Very well. And thank you so much, Ishmael, for the invitation to join you all today. I promise I'm going to keep this brief, and we do want to open up an opportunity for questions that, you all might have. As you stated, Ishmael, this is a topic that is not only of interest, and there's much conversation happening across campus and at our institution, but across higher ed. This is a quite a interesting technology, one that has some far-reaching potential opportunities, implications for our world in general, but you know, specifically as we are, you know, in the classroom working with our students, what does this mean for us as educators? And so my goal here today is to, for those of you that maybe aren't as familiar with what this ChatGPT thing is to try in a very simple and quick way to introduce it, but also I think most importantly to point you to some of the great work that our faculty are already doing on campus, helping to facilitate and foster conversation as we consider what are the possibilities for us. What does it mean for our teaching? What does it mean for the world in which we're preparing students to be able to go out into to be successful as we move forward? And we've got a great opportunity coming up for you to hear more from our faculty. And I'm going to point that out and point you to where you can find more details, and then hopefully to leave a couple of minutes for questions at the end for anyone that might have those, knowing that you have a big agenda and also that want to keep you here longer than necessary. So what is ChatGPT? What is you know, this idea of AI? How many of you have heard of ChatGPT already? Just show of hands, many hands, most hands across the place. But just to define it very simply, ChatGPT is an artificial intelligence tool that is using something called natural language processing. And so really what that is a technology that is taking text input and is running algorithms to be able to then generate and suggest a text-based response. And so in essence, you ask it a question and it gives you back a prompt, a response that uses natural language processing. So very simply, that's really what it is. And so a question like, and I'm going to show you a couple of sample prompts just to give you a sense if you've not played with ChatGPT before. You actually can go, it's free to try and use, and you can try it out for yourself. So here's a prompt where I said, just what are you? And you can see this you know, rather detailed response that I received back in complete sentence structure, right, with punctuation and so forth. And so it does give back well thought and thorough responses. And so what are some of the things that this technology can do? Ever since this came out, and it was back end of November, early December, when this was first became available, there's a company called OpenAI that developed this iteration of this natural language processing technology, this AI, and made it available. And they opened it up and made it kind of open for anyone to utilize. And so at that time, it seems like the whole world started to try providing different prompts and trying to see what this technology would respond with. And so some of the examples you can see on this list here, we've listed out some of the different things that it can do. And I'm going to share with you a resource in a moment where you can go and you can explore further. But really a robust set of things, everything from, you know, helping write essays to lesson plans, even can help draft learning objectives even. So quite interesting list of many things that that this technology has been used for and can do. So to give you a few examples, here's an example where I asked ChatGPT to write learning objectives for a course about the ethical use of AI in education. And you can see a lengthy response that I received back. Another sample, I gave it a prompt to write an email to a student, Lily, who missed class and needs to make it up in 2 weeks by watching the class recording and completing the class activities. And so with that specific prompt, I actually got a draft email, multiple paragraphs, right? A starting point that I could use in crafting a response to a student. So really powerful technology here that could save time, help provide an initial draft of something that could be further refined over time. So what can this technology not do yet? So some things to keep in mind is the data scientists who developed this technology trained it on information that was available as of 2021. And so things like Wikipedia and a number of different knowledge sources were utilized. It's not connected to the internet and it's not able to keep current. So there's a lot of things that it can't do. For example, it can't write a self-reflection, right? It can't introspectively take content and reflect over time of how what it means to an individual. As I said, anything that happened after 2021, it can't speak to, it can't respond to. It also cannot respond with any sort of non-text responses. It really is a natural languaging tool in the sense that it is definitely text-based. It can't make predictions about the future. It's working on a pre-trained set of data that it had access to. It does not have access to the internet, as I said, and so it's not keeping current. It's not, as we all know, information is changing so rapidly and the internet is one way in which that is shared widely. It's not currently connected, and so it's not able to keep up over time. So, and this is really where we've had some fantastic conversations happening here across the campus. It's been great to hear. We've been involved, and just today I had a meeting of my Innovative Teaching and Learning Advisory Committee, the faculty on that group. We asked them to share what conversations are happening in their departments related to this ChatGPT and how it's being used in teaching and learning, and many great feedback. A lot of faculty who are very interested are talking about this, are trying to figure out and grapple with what does this mean for my teaching, and how can I think about how this impacts the role that I have and the types of work that I have my students do in my classroom. How could this be yet another way in which we promote critical thinking? We think critically about what is being provided. ChatGPT, it is not perfect. It often will make up. When it doesn't know the answer to something, it will generate an answer and make things up that aren't correct. And so in many of the blogs and newsletters and such that I'm sure many of you follow, faculty are talking about ways in which they're starting to think about how they incorporate and infuse this technology into how they think about the activities for their students. So things like rethinking some of the things that you do in your class. You could have students critically analyze the output from ChatGPT. You know, how is this is correct or not? And what improvements would they make to what is being provided? You know, talking with your students about use of these kinds of artificial intelligence tools. ChatGPT is just the latest. There are many other tools that are out there, and there'll be many more to come as over time we see artificial intelligence continue to develop. And so thinking about that, and you know, it's a great opportunity even to rethink a bit the kinds of activities that you have your students, the ways in which you grade, and having students take a more self-reflective, critical look at what they're turning in. How is what they're submitting different and better than what, you know, an AI robot could create, and really to help build upon the sense of critical thinking. And so there are many suggestions, and we're starting to hear from faculty across campus who are trying to incorporate ChatGPT into some of their learning activities. We know, I'm going to pick on computer science. Nick Koronis, the chair of computer science, he's talked quite a bit about the work that he and his faculty are doing, thinking about how can this change the way in which they teach computer programming? Because one of the things ChatGPT can do is actually write computer programs. And so how do you use that as a launching point for students to then build upon and analyze the code that's being developed, for example? So what can you do? What else can you do? I'm going to make sure I pause and open it up for questions, but there's so much being written and talked about ChatGPT in the media, it's on the news, it's really everywhere. We've started to pull together a resource, a faculty guide on ChatGPT in education. We've shared this out with chairs and with faculty. You've maybe already come across it. If you haven't, there's a short URL there, or you can snap a picture of that code and it'll bring it up on your phone. Where we're trying to curate some of the tips, recommendations, trying to keep a current list of some of the most current sources where you can read about the developments of ChatGPT. On this guide, you can also access, and I want to put a shameless plug out for two really fantastic resources. One is a recording of a panel discussion that we facilitated this past week with several of our faculty and staff here talking about ChatGPT in education and what does it mean, and to really, again, foster the conversation. We had over 70 faculty register, and almost everybody attended. It was amazing. We had almost perfect attendance, very engaged conversation. I don't know if anybody in the room was a part of that initial panel. I see several hands. Thank you for participating in that. So the recording is available. And if you weren't able to attend, I'd encourage you to check out the recording. You can watch it on 2x speed, so you could speed through it. But some great insights from our faculty, kind of talking about starting to think about, you know, is this, you know, what do we think about the academic integrity, you know, ramifications of this? How do we think about the ways in which, how do we as faculty figure out if students are using this in their submissions and work? We started to dive into all of those topics in this panel, so I'd encourage you to check that out. I'm also going to put a plug in for a follow-up panel that we have scheduled. We just announced it's going to be on March 24th on Friday, where we're going to bring back together a separate group of our faculty to really now kind of look into the future of this artificial intelligence, and not just what does it mean for the classroom, but what does it mean for us in life, in our society, and starting to think about some of the ramifications for helping prepare our students as they leave our classrooms to go out and be successful in a world in which this type of technology is going to be not only at our fingertips, but I would argue at some point we're going to be expected to know how to use it and make use of it in our daily lives. And so we're excited to have Faculty, Ann Zoranian from Communication, David Gunkel is going to be joining us from Communication, Andrea Guzman from Communication, Mona Ramimi from Computer Science, and Mayona Sun from Computer Science as well. So hope you will join us. The link to register for this is on that guide as well, that I'll put this back up. So we'd love for you to join us, bring your questions, and we'll continue to have a great dialogue and a conversation. And so with that, I think I will, in the interest of time, I'll stop there and see if there's any questions or comments, or if you yourselves in your departments, you're discussing ChatGPT and this technology, kind of some initial feedback or just give us a sense of what conversations you're having in your departments. If there's time for that, I'd love to open up and hear from you all.
Absolutely. So the floor is open. We have two mics here, one here and one on this side.
My name is Cynthia Campbell from the College of Education, Department of Educational Technology Research and Assessment. Thank you, Jason, for sort of opening up this conversation. And I've been thinking about this quite a lot since it came on my radar. And I was just thinking about implications for education as laid some of those out. We value academic integrity. And I'm just wondering where the line is drawn from sort of doing a sort of a question that goes out there and then it comes back in a fairly sophisticated way. If the student doesn't, you know, edit it, doesn't really think about it, but just submits it as it is. I don't know. I am a little concerned about that. And particularly, I'm wondering if some of our safety guards like SafeAssign and some of those things would pick any of that up.
Great questions. It's probably the number one question, Cynthia, that I think many academics are talking about, thinking about, like, what does this mean? How are we able to know if students are using this? And what's interesting, if you've used this yourself and you put in a prompt and you get a response and you put that exact same prompt in, you get a different response. It does not give you a rote, you know, word for word response back. It is generating different responses over time. There are tools being developed that will be able to check and to identify certain instances of this technology. You mentioned SafeAssign, which is a tool we have institutionally. It's built into Blackboard that checks submitted work for plagiarism across the internet. These tools are limited. And I think it's interesting that while there will be tools developed, and even Blackboard has announced they're exploring how do they build in like this kind of checking technology, adding it into what's already there. There are other open source tools that are being established. I think a student from Columbia actually built a tool over a weekend using the OpenAI framework to identify work that was created with this tool. I think what's so interesting to follow is how quickly this is all changing. The pace and at which this technology is accelerating is going to be very interesting. I think while there will be tools developed that will flag some instances of use of the tool, I think at the same time, there will be continued advances where people will try to get around the system. I know the developer of the ChatGPT tool, they've talked about developing some kind of watermark technology with it. So when it's kind of fully baked and made available, that there would be some sort of digital watermark that could be used to help flag whether this was created using a tool like this or not. I think we're going to closely follow how this technology advances. Institutionally, we always do our best to try to stay on the cutting edge of what's out there, what tools are available to help our faculty, you know, be successful in their teaching. And so we'll definitely keep a pulse on what's happening. And as tools become available that can help flag some of this, we'll certainly explore what's possible. So thank you for that question, Cynthia. That's probably the first question we often hear. Other questions or just comments, thoughts?
Hi, Diego Valese, OMIS department. First of all, thank you for the presentation. As you said, I think that it's not something we can fight or fit like when computer came out, we should stay away from it. It's going to be part of our life. It's going to have an impact from our student for ourselves. So just like a bicycle with the mind on steroids. But a couple of questions I have for you is, I mean, any plan of having ChatGPT Plus available for faculty? The ChatGPT has some limitation, availability limitation, and ChatGPT Plus is the premium version. I think it's 20 a month as of right now. And now a different question, because ChatGPT is only one of those tools that are coming up. There are some of them that are more on the video side or video editing side. For people that teach online or make a lot of presentation or make changes to presentation, they can be very useful. For example, there is Synthesia.io that even makes avatar of ourselves. And then you just, you know, every year you can update the materials and replicate that. That can be a lot of time saving from our point of view. But very excited of those presentations. I was at the first one, and I'm glad you guys are being a cutting edge, because it's going to be changing our life, and our students need to learn also how to use.
Yeah, no, that's great. Thank you for that. To answer your first question, there's no immediate plan to try and license that, but certainly follow up. Drop me a note with those questions, and I can follow up with you. I mean, it's something we will look at. When we do this with any new tool that comes out, if there's a demand and it meets a need, we try to be as responsive institutionally. There are budget limitations, obviously, that we have to work with, but certainly we want to be exploring these new tools as they become available. And you eloquently pointed that ChatGPT, right, is one instance of a public, freely available tool, which is why it's getting such buzz, is because it's anybody can just get in and use it. But that model of being able to provide back a response, doing it not just in text, but with video, with other forms of media, is where I think, you know, things are going to accelerate as we move forward. And so we will try to keep abreast of what those possibilities are, and certainly value faculty that input that you all have. So feel free to reach out either to me or to our Center for Innovative Teaching and Learning. Drop us a note, bring us your ideas, and we'll try to keep the conversation going. So thank you for that. Yeah. Oh, I see another hand.
Hello, my name is Sahar Vahobzadeh. Thank you so much for the presentation. You asked about our own experience.
Yes.
I just want to say something about the experience that we had with my colleagues. We were discussing a scientific phenomenon, and then we gave the same question. The answers that we got were completely, they were not different, they were completely opposite to each other. And after that conversation, I mentioned this in the class, that it's a tool, we cannot avoid using it because it's already there. People can be curious about it. But what is important is that we should not trust it. And because there was another example that I asked ChatGPT, give me the publications by Sahar Vahobzadeh. Mm-hmm. It even gave me DOIs, but they were not correct. So I told my students that you can use it as an outline, but do not trust what it gives you. Go back and double check and make sure that it has the integrity, it is correct, and you're not getting the false confidence by using this software.
Yes, thank you for drawing that out. And that's so true. It's a predictive model, and when it doesn't know the answer, it will make things up, it'll be incorrect. And so truly, you can't trust everything that it says. You have to have a critical eye. And so, you know, from my perspective, as I think about even the students I teach, how do we instill that kind of that digital literacy of being critical, skeptical, and checking, using these tools, but making sure that we understand and we know what that output is, and can we trust it or not? You can't trust everything that ChatGPT gives you, definitely. And thank you for raising that. And so that's part of those conversations that I think you can have with your students, is to actually put a prompt through it, see what you get back. I've got some examples I share in that guide of, yeah, completely wrong bibliographic information, completely misstating, you know, a response back to, or we're asking a very concrete, specific black and white answer, and you get the wrong response. That certainly happens. Now, I will say that this language learning model, it's learning. So part of the reason that they made this freely available to anyone is as people are putting content through, you can actually thumb up or down the response that you get back. And so they're collecting feedback, and it's learning and making itself smarter over time. There's a new version of this that's under development that is coming out soon, that's supposed to be 50 times better than this initial version. You've got companies like Microsoft that are building, they're going to build this kind of technology into Microsoft Office, and the Bing search engine is going to have this kind of capability into the future. So it's a technology that's not going away. It's something I think it's important that we're aware of, and that we think about how does this continue to impact our society and our teaching and learning with our students.
Any other questions? Maybe I will just take a prerogative and ask one question. In the domain of, I don't know what, ethics, hearing from media, this is a tool too that can be used sometimes to command, you know, ask questions, to provide, you know, certain answers that become very problematic. And I wonder where we are when it comes to regulating that kind of information, especially within academic set, you know, setting where censorship, I think, is a very important, you know, issue. Mm-hmm. At the same time, too, we've got to be aware about, you know, the leaps and bounds that, you know, could go. I don't know whether the PLAS GPT would have those kind of filters or stuff like that to provide guardrails against things that,
yep,
may not take us to those kind of
No, it's a great question. It's a great, these are the, these and so many other questions are ones that, right, we're all still grappling with. You know, I think it's really going to be up to us, the users, and to really help shape the response of what is, I mean, what are the ethics of using this? How should it be cited? What happens when it does, it's knowingly giving wrong information and people are believing that? What's the responsibility to respond to that? So these are the kinds of questions, and this is why we want this dialogue amongst our faculty here, who can help shape our response institutionally, how we want to be responsive and proactive in working with our students, and helping them learn about how to use this. You know, I think about my own, you know, I have an eighth grader and a sixth grader, and, you know, conversations about what do you believe on the internet, right? Because you can find anything on the internet nowadays. And ChatGPT is another example of you can get any kind of response back you're looking for. And how do you twist it? You know, we want our students, we want individuals who are digitally literate and can make sense of what they find and really evaluate, is this real or not? And so it takes that critical thinking skill, and it makes it all the more important, I think, moving forward.
So. Great. I want to say thank you so much
for the invitation to come.
Thank you for this informative presentation. And I think it's very useful. There's no doubt that many of us are at different kind of stages and levels. And based on this information that we are getting, for me, I think there is still a lot to digest. But one thing that it's comforting is that we as institution, I think we are endowed with faculty who think critically about, you know, the possibilities and the limitations and so many things that, you know, show us that this is something, this is a change that we have to embrace, right? And do everything within our own kind of resources limit to make use of it. So thank you very much. Please join me in thanking Jason for this. We'll now move to agenda item 9. We have two agenda items here. 9A is proposed amendment to Faculty Senate bylaws, Article 4.6.3.1, Honors Committee student membership. This article was brought back, this is brought back for a second reading, and we have Omar Grayeb, Senior Vice Provost for Academic Affairs, and Andrea Radisano, Assistant Vice Provost, University Honors Program, who are in hand to present this item for second reading. So, Andrea, the floor is all yours.
Hi there. Sorry, no Omar. It's my pleasure to come back and be short one second. You guys listened to this last month as well. Just as a refresher, the bylaw change is to shift in a small way the manner in which the student representation for Honors Committee, the University Honors Committee, is chosen. So there are 5 students. The proposal doesn't change that. There will continue to be 5 students represented on Honors Committee. It's just that 1 out of the 5 it's proposed to appoint from student leadership within the Honors Program, normally the head Honors Fellow, with the idea being that it would be really beneficial to the student voice. It would amplify it. It would, I think, improve it and bolster the confidence of the other student members of the committee to participate, having one of their own with quite a lot of knowledge. They act as peer advisors. They know all of the ins and outs of the program. So that was the rationale for it. And this was unanimously approved by the University Honors Committee.
Thank you, Andrea. At this point, I would like to make a motion. I would like to ask for a motion and a second to approve the proposed amendment. Sarah Marsh, and any discussion? Seeing none, I guess we will move to the next.
So I think we're ready to vote. The first thing I'm going to do is go to our voting slide. If your name is on this slide, or if you're here for someone whose name is on this slide, that means you're a voting member today. So be sure you have a clicker. They're in the back. While people are getting the clickers, I'll remind you that there's no need to turn the clicker on. When we get ready to vote, we're not ready yet, but when we do get ready, you will click 1 for yes, you agree with the motion to approve the proposed amendment, 2 no, you don't agree, and 3 abstain. We need 2/3 of those voting to pass this amendment. And so now I'm going to go back. I'll just leave it there, I guess. All right, so now I'm gonna open that and you can go ahead and click 1 for yes, 2 for no, 3 for abstain. And if you're having any trouble with your clicker, rather than go back and get a new one, just bring it up here and we'll work through it. Anybody else who wants to vote? Okay, we'll close the balloting. And that clearly passes.
So now we move to agenda item 9B. Propose amendment to Faculty Senate bylaws, Article 1, membership of the Faculty Senate. This article or this proposed amendment is brought back for second reading, and you will find information about it on page 9. The amendment is proposed in order to restore language that was inadvertently removed during the Reimagining Shared Governance proposal of 2029-2020. The proposed language restores the definition of tenure track faculty who are eligible to elect and to be elected to serve on Faculty Senate, excluding those faculty serving in selected administrative roles from eligibility. The proposed language also restores alignment with NIU Constitution, Article 7.3, which describe the right of the faculty organize a faculty senate. And with that, I will entertain a motion and a second to approve the proposed amendment. Okay, David Valentina, and second, Natasha Johnson. Any discussion? Okay, seeing none, I will defer to Pat to walk us through again.
Okay, so there's no need to erase your last vote. When you put your new vote in, it will automatically record that. So again, if you want to vote yes, you agree with this motion to approve this proposed amendment, you are going to click one. No is two, and three is abstain. Anybody else? Okay, I'm going to close that. And that also passes.
So we will move to agenda item 10, new business. So we have before us agenda item 10A, which is a proposal to approve the 2032-33 academic calendar by Provost Ingram, Vice President and Provost. Thank you.
Thank you. So we put together a calendar about 10 years ahead. We have a bunch of guidelines that tell us what the calendar should be. And I think I'm just here to answer any questions that you might have about the calendar. Any questions? All right.
So we're going to do a voice vote for this.
Take a
motion. Okay. So I entertain a motion and a second to adopt this proposed academic calendar. So we have Lori and second, David Valentine. Discussion? Any discussion? So all in favor, say aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. So we now come to agenda item 11, report from councils, boards, and standing committees. Agenda item 11A would be Faculty Senate, University Council Rules, Governance, and Election Committee report. And we have Lori Hartentoff in hand to walk us through.
Hi. So we are coming up to the time where we need to start thinking about electing a new president to the Faculty Senate. So this is in the I'll read off the script so I don't screw it up. The list of those eligible to be nominated is on page 14 of your packet, and they're also on the screen, hopefully. This nominations for the Office of Faculty Senate will be president will be taken from the Faculty Senate floor during the March 29th Faculty Senate meeting. Voting members are asked to review the lists being provided at this time and use the coming weeks to prepare for making the nominations at that March 29th meeting. Letters of acceptance of a nomination will be due in the Office of Faculty Senate by Friday, April 14th. Those letters of acceptance of nominations will be provided to the Faculty Senate members via email by Wednesday, April 19th, and also will be included in the April 26th Faculty Senate agenda packet. Elections of the 2023-24 Faculty Senate President will be held during the April 26th Faculty Senate meeting. Okay. So now, the really exciting part is we need three faculty members, tenured faculty, and three instructors for the grievance panel, and they're going to be chosen just by lot. So it's nothing other than just being drawn. Who wants, will you come help me? Come up here. I need someone to draw. You're going to draw. So this is the tenured faculty. We need three of them.
Should I read?
Sure.
All right. Larissa Garcia, University Libraries.
Woohoo!
Peter Chomentowski, yes, College of Education, Department of Kinesiology and Physical Education. And Sheila Barrett, College of Health and Human Sciences, School of Health Studies.
Yay. Okay. Right. So then we have instructors. You can put them back in there because we have a separate envelope for that. Right? I think that they recorded. You want to help me with this one too?
Sure.
Such a good job. Okay. So these are the instructors. Again, we need three.
Marsha Burke, College of Health and Human Sciences, School of Health Studies. Jason Acts, College of Liberal Arts and Sciences, Department of Communication.
And?
Ed Miguel, College of Engineering and Engineering Technology, Department of Electrical Engineering.
Thank you. Thanks. Congratulations. All right. I think that's it.
Okay, so now we move to agenda item 11B, Faculty Advisory Council to the IBHE report, and we do not have report. That will move to 11C, University Advisory Committee to the Board of Trustees, members of which include Felicia Bohannon, Paula Nicholson, Ismail Montana, Katie Jacob, Karen Whitby, and Brad Craig. I will provide a brief, or rather long, because the report captures Board of Trustees Committee Day meeting that was held on February 16. And what follows is select highlight according to the order of the Committee Day meetings. So the agenda for the first committee, the Academic Affairs, Student Affairs, and Personnel Committee, ASAP, saw three academic program changes. Two of these focus on a request for deletion of the Bachelor of Science in Hospitality and Tourism Management. This program has been closed to enrollment since May 2021. And the program is now offered with an emphasis in hospitality and tourism management through the Bachelor of Science program in Business Administration. The second proposed request for deletion centered on the Master of Science in Taxation offered by the Department of Accountancy in the College of Business. This program too has been closed for enrollment for a couple of years and has no students in it. The third proposed academic program change item pertains to a new minor in sports medicine. The university proposes to offer this minor in the Department of Kinesiology and Physical Education within the College of Education. The university recommender, the Academic Affairs, Student Affairs, and Personnel Committee endorses this request and asks that the president forward them to the Board of Trustees for approval at its meeting on March 23rd, 2023 meeting. ASAP also discussed a couple of sabbatical items. This include recommendation for faculty and supported professional staff sabbatical leave for the period of 2023-2024 academic year, and propose that the university recommend that the president forward it to the Board of Trustees for approval again at March 23rd, 2023 meeting. Beside these items, Dr. Holly Jones, an associate professor in the Department of Biological Science, who recently completed a sabbatical, gave a brief report on the scholarly work she completed during her sabbatical leave. The committee also presented annual report on the outcome of all sabbatical leaves that occurred in the period 2019-2020 academic year. And this concludes the report for ASAP or this committee. Moving on to Research and Innovation, Legal and Legislative Affairs Committee. Well, there were a lot of, couple of presentation items that included a sponsored program administrative report. And according to Dr. Jerry Blasey, NIU has received a total of 190 sponsored awards from beginning of the current fiscal year, totaling 27.8 million. Dr. Blasey also provided a federal relations update, including reports on several appropriations that are in progress. Another item was reporting from this committee agenda was Dr. Zachary Wall Alexander and Ms. Gabrielle Bennett. A presentation on the accomplishment of Project Flex, a program sponsored by the Department of Kinesiology and Physical Education for youth who are incarcerated in Illinois Department of Juvenile Justice. And some of you who are following media coverage, you would have seen that this development, I mean, this has been covered by some of the Chicago TV stations. I will move now to FAFCO, which is Finance, Audit, Compliance, Facilities and Operations Committee. This particular committee had a very, very packed agenda, and agenda focused on two financial updates, 16 university recommendation requests, and three presentations. For the recommendations, I'm just going to give very brief select ones. For the fiscal year 2024, there was room and board pricing recommendation, and also recommendation for a zero increase in base and differential tuition for undergraduate and graduate student and for law student for the academic year 2024. There was also recommendation for increase in the graduation fee paid by students in the semester during which they graduate. This has not been increased since 1999, but will now increase to $40 for baccalaureate student and $55 for graduate student effective August 2023. University also is in the process of negotiating for health insurance plan for fiscal year 2024, and this is expected to see kind of lowering student insurance premium. So these are just select highlights from the FAFCO committee, who reports on the Board of Trustees special day meetings agenda items can all be found on the BOT website, and their next meeting will be March 23rd, 2023. With that, I will move on to the next agenda item 11C, faculty right and responsibilities. We have no report. The next one then would be D, Social Justice Committee, and we have David Valentina in hand.
Thank you, Ishmael. My name is David Valentina. I'm faculty in psychology and chair of the Social Justice Committee. So as you may remember, the faculty, the Social Justice Committee has three work groups. One of the work groups is the Institutional Racism Work Group. And I see that Beth McGowan is not here for that. So I just thought I would share a little summary of what's happening there. One of the charges of that group is to work on the development of a five-year strategic plan for addressing diversity issues and institutional racism issues here at NIU. We've been working on that for a couple of years now, and we've been asked to wait until the shared equity leadership model is at least partially implemented. And, you know, that's a little bit frustrating for us because we've been working on this for a couple of years, but we think that that's not an unreasonable request. We hope that you know, the delay will be worth it. There's also efforts on that committee to try to encourage the boards and councils and standing committees to align with the presidential goals. And so that's the activity of that committee. The second work group is the academic, I'm sorry, the DEI group. And I'm going to put Natasha on the spot. I don't know if you care to share a little bit. I know that you've been coming up with some ideas for lifting up some of the diversity related research at NIU. Do you want to say anything now or? Okay. All right. So we'll look forward to getting some proposals and information from you, hopefully in an upcoming meeting. The third work group is the Academic Affairs Work Group, and Shodan. I don't know if Shodan, I think Shodan is. If you want to, I understand that you're group has been going around meeting with councils, but if you want to share some information, that'd be
sure. So this semester, we have been touring all the college councils again. For some colleges, it's the second round. For some colleges, it's the first round. So for the second round of our touring, we are sharing a little bit about what we're finding in the first round. When we ask about if our college councils are ready, their general feelings, their general thoughts about incorporating DEI component into their tenure and promotion process policies. And we also shared a little bit about our ongoing recommendations to Faculty Senate to get feedback. We've received a lot of valuable feedback, and we're in the process of incorporating that all to our current recommendations to Faculty Senate bylaws.
Great. Thank you, Shodan. I've had the pleasure of being able to sit in on many, not all, of those meetings. And in the process of that, I make the observation that there are many activities taking place related to DEI all throughout the university. I was really quite surprised and impressed. There are some colleges that are very active, some departments that are very active. And that being said, there's also many areas of the university where there's little to nothing taking place. And that variability in activities left me kind of wondering what's going on. I think that we have a university that is of many different minds, and that really calls attention to the need for more dialogue and more conversation within units, between units. And in the spirit of that, I'd like to challenge us here today to have a little bit of dialogue about that. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to just take a few minutes. Right now, there are many people who are seated at some tables. There are some people who are just maybe alone or in small groups. So I encourage you maybe to move to a table where you can just briefly take a couple of minutes, 3 or 5 minutes, to share some information about activities that are going on in your unit with other people at the table, and to maybe if there's nothing going on, or if you don't know what things going on, that would also be useful to share. So if I could have people who are at tables with few people, could you please relocate to a table where there is more people? And then if we could just take a few minutes to share some of that information about what's happening in your specific unit that you know about, or things that if there aren't things happening, maybe share that information as well.
Right. Oh, sure. Catch things up, man. Good. Engaging. Now they're talking. That place was quiet. Oh, got it. Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you. Oh, my unit, what's going on?
Let's just take about one more minute. Okay, if you could find a comfortable place to wrap up there. I don't have any particular goals in mind here other than just to try to increase some dialogue. I would like to invite if anybody would be willing to share any observations from your discussion, I'd encourage you to do so.
Natasha Johnson, OSC. So I'll share with my group what we're doing at Recreation is before we did the conversations on diversity, the code facilitations. So now we're the second largest employer of students on campus. So what we've done is created the same modules that we're already doing across campus, and we're now having our students use them as training. So anybody who works with us, if they're student staff, they'll go through all of these trainings with us. So it kind of worked out that myself and another colleague also did the code conversation. So we both kind of go back and forth. So now we're getting our students more open to the discussions, and also at the same time, making it more inclusive for when people want to come to the rec so they can feel like they're included.
Great, thank you, Natasha.
Hi, Lori from theater. We're obviously have a long ways to grow, but we are actively trying to choose plays that are by a diverse voice. And so it's not just the old, you know, Shakespeare. We do Shakespeare too, but not just the old authors, but people with diverse voices. And we actively pursue doing that. It's sometimes a challenge for us is choosing productions, plays that we don't have the population to cast. So it's a struggle for us to choose a season because of all that. But we're trying to expose our students and hopefully the university at large to a diverse population and diverse voices from different people, both color people of different gender affiliations. So.
Great, thank you. I see that I'm getting the nudge that I've kept people too long. Thank you so much. I hope that you'll encourage people within your departments and to engage in some conversations and maybe also people across departments as well. Thank you.
Right. Thank you very much, David. Great. Okay. Student Government Association. We have Dallas. Dallas was. Okay. Seeing no Dallas, we move to Operating Staff Council.
Operating Staff Council. I'm in the same spirit of conversation during these reports. I submitted a couple of questions to Pat about, I want to get your thoughts on, first of all, how do you report information back to your constituents? We have historically had a challenge with that just because of the far of, you know, we have everything from building services to whatever it is I do, marketing. So that, and then also, how do you gather information from your constituents that will inform your advocacy efforts? And for instance, you know, we have communications like newsletters, email announcements, NIU Today stories, and our website. But I know in this room, there is probably a wide array of activities you do for to keep your constituents informed and then to find out what they need advocacy for. Everything now, we can always. I know it's 4:25. I think we're probably all done by now.
Right. I think you have an input from David.
I just thought I'd try to answer your question. Is this on? I don't know if you can hear me. So when I leave the Faculty Senate meeting, we'll have a faculty, a departmental meeting this Friday, and I'll be asked to give a report. And typically at that time, I try to pick out one or two or three things. Sometimes there's no report, and I'm just very selective, like what's most relevant for my constituency. And I don't really ask them for what input they would have, which is, you point out maybe a flaw in our practice that I should probably be doing that.
Asha suggested.
Great. Thank you, Holly. Well, one of the benefits of these pre-circulated questions is that not only we have opportunity to think about it and engage anyone who is reporting on them, but even after we leave this room, any thought that occurred to any of us after that, we can always reach out to the one posing the questions. And in this case, we have Holly Nicholson and Natasha Johnson. Either of them take your input. So our last agenda item would be 11G. We have Supportive Professional Staff Council. Felicia, do you have any report at all? Okay, so we do not have report. And that brings us to the last agenda item, which is agenda item 12, the informational item, which are informational at best. You can always consult them for the university standing committees and the like to get a minute of meetings and other reports through the links that are provided. So with that, unless there's any other matter, I will entertain a motion to adjourn today's meeting. So all in favor, say aye. Any opposed? Thank you and have a wonderful remainder of the day and drive safely as the weather is bad today.